I mean, the game I'm a creative lead on. I'm the writer, I'm the creative lead, I'm the product manager. Like, there's an unending thing of...
Can't wait to see what this game is.
I know.
I'm so excited.
Me too. I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, it's Half-Life 3.
Confirmed.
Brought
you heard
to you
it here.
Harmonix.
Harmonix is Half-Life 3. This seems suspicious.
Sealed. I have a thumb.
Nice.
I have a thumb.
Well,
too.
Thank you guys. Honestly, thank you guys so much for coming out. This is Origin Stories, the crazy ways we got into gaming. And everyone up here is awesome in their own respective ways. And we're just going to kind of hang out and tell some stories. And my selfish desire is to, in some way, shape, or form, inspire you to do the stuff that you want to do. Before I let everyone introduce themselves, I'll just kind of briefly say what the panel is really about. I'm actually very happy. I know there's a BioWare panel right now that many people that I know are at. And yeah, and the fact that you guys showed up at all.
He's out.
Yeah,
like,
and I'm leaving, and I'll see you guys later. No, the fact that you guys showed up at all is really awesome.
We
I was expecting many tumbleweeds, which would be terrifying. So the fact that you guys showed up at all is great. So my name is Ash. I'm the community manager for Sword Coast Legends, which is down on the floor right now, which is pretty awesome. And I'm also a member of a podcast called Nerd Appropriate Rated NA. We've been around for about 5 years, and that was really my entry into gaming. We ran around interviewing people and having fun. I'll tell the full story later, but I'm going to let everyone introduce themselves.
All right. Hey, I'm Sean Baptiste. I do the marketing for Adult Swim Games. We'll get into more than that soon.
I'm Jessa Brzezinski. I work at Harmonix. I'm a product manager and currently also a creative lead.
Hi. Oh, shit. Hi, I'm Laura Bailey. I'm a voice actress for video games and animation and stuff.
My name is Ben Britton. I'm a technical director for two little indie game companies, one called Mighty Games and one called Tin Man Games out of Melbourne, Australia.
And my name is Myelin Fitzwater Barrows. I'm a freelance writer and producer, and I've worked with Tin Man Games and BioWare and some different companies like that.
Cool. Well, thank you guys for coming. This is like a weird time, and everyone's exhausted, and thank you guys again. I'll start off just a brief version of my story, because no one wants to hear the eight-hour version, but I've been going to cons basically my whole life. My mom took me to one of my first cons when I was like 12. I went to a Star Trek con, saw John DeLancey. He signed a cue ball for me, and like I freaked out and was like, oh my God, you know, this is reality. I can meet these people and I can go have fun. And I've been going to cons ever since. About, at this point, 5.5 years ago, I went to San Diego Comic-Con and I went to a panel where they were talking about something very similar to this. And I ran into one of the panelists after the show and was like, wow, I really just want to, you know, start blogging and start writing and expressing my creativity and getting out there and talking to more people. And she was like, just fucking do it. What are you doing? Like, there's no barrier to entry. Just write, go to shows, talk to people, and there's nothing to stop you. There's no like guild of bloggers, and there's no one to stop you from breaking in the industry really other than yourself. So I went back home after Comic-Con, and I started talking to my buddies, and these guys right here are still here. Hey, guys. And I was like, we really need to do this. We really need to start just recording ourselves and having fun. So we started a podcast, and you know, the biggest advice I can really give about podcasting is if you're going to do it, you have to do it regularly. So we did it every week almost for 5 years now, and we're coming up on our fifth anniversary. And what we learned was that, you know, people in the industry are generally very kind people, and it's really easy to get out there and meet people and to network and to have fun while you're doing it. So, you know, the whole time that we were doing the show, I was a high school teacher, so I would go to work every single day. I would teach high school history, and you know, I would go home at night and I would start writing articles about the games I loved and about the things that I really loved. And so it was, I led this sort of this secret dual life, right? Where I was at, and during the day I was this like relatively buttoned up, school teacher. And then at night I'd go home and I'd write stuff. And then we'd record on the weekends. We'd go to as many cons as we could go to. We'd pay for it out of pocket. And we would just go and talk to people, you know, as often as we could. And that's actually how I met a lot of the people here. I've actually been trying to get Laura on the show for like years. It's been like, I've been such a pain in the ass. I'm like, will you come on the show? I'm so annoying. I am like,
that's
honestly,
awesome.
Thank you. I'm pretty annoying, and I think being annoyingly persistent but generally nice person goes a very long way. So what happened to me was, you know, nepotism goes a long way too. If you meet a lot of people and you network and you talk to people, you'll generally meet people that you click with and that you end up really enjoy spending time with. So you'll go to these shows and you'll meet folks like the folks in this panel, and it becomes like a little bit of a family reunion. And I'm sure a lot of you guys out there, when you guys go to shows, it, you know, if you go to PAX every single year, eventually you're going to start building a little bit of a family. And that's something really magical. And eventually that can segue into getting a job in the industry. So I'm going on and on. So the shortest version of what happened to me was last year, I had a friend who's been my friend for a really long time. And he's the art director for Sword Coast Legends. And he knew I was teaching school. He knew I did the show. You know, I had written literally thousands of articles. I'd been to probably hundreds of shows since I was a kid. So I kind of, in some way, shape, or form, understood how the industry worked. Like, I didn't really understand how the industry worked, but I had at least a layman's perspective on how the industry worked. So he's like, hey, we're working on this game. It's a Dungeons & Dragons game. And I lost my mind. Yeah, I lost my mind. I had been playing Dungeons & Dragons since I was 7 years old. And, you know, all of a sudden this opportunity popped up, and I got to work with, you know, a lot of the guys that directed Dragon Age Origins are on our team, and all of a sudden now I'm in this position where I still get to be me, which is great. I still get to do Nerd Appropriate, which is great, and I get to represent Sword Coast Legends, which is insane to me. So we'll talk more, but everyone else's story is far more exciting than my own. So let's just go straight down the line. Good, Sean.
Okay. So let's see. Late 90s, I went to school for theater. Which I've noticed is kind of a running thing in the game industry. A lot of people are like, I'm gonna be in theater. I need a paycheck though, and then they end up in games.
For the huge paycheck.
I know. No matter what, we're suckered into this. But I went out. I worked for a startup movie studio in California. That was a bad experience. I was involved in a heist. That's a story for a different panel. And then I came running home. And
didn't your college that you went to close?
My college that I went to closed, which is good because rather than having a theater degree, I don't have a theater degree, which makes me eminently more employable. I could say it. At any rate, so I at the time I was working as a playwright and an actor and just in like local stuff. I wasn't. You haven't seen me in anything, I promise you. But you know, and that was starting to get, I was starting to get burnt out on it a little bit, and I started getting headaches, like really bad headaches. And I thought it was because I worked in a video store, the smells. It ended up being, it took about 2 years to get diagnosed, but I had a brain tumor, still do. So this is in the early 2000s, and so I had to quit my job, I had to quit theater, I had to quit everything, moved back in with my mom. I was in the attic. I didn't have health insurance, so I couldn't get surgery. That was a thing. So I was just, all I could do was basically be in my mom's attic playing video games like a weird shut-in.
Or awesome.
Or an awesome shut-in. a weird, crazy shut-in. But so I was playing lots of video games. Eventually, I did get surgery. They were able to bypass the crappy parts. I have hydrocephalus. It's a big thing. It gives me lots of headaches. But they found a way to put something into my head that would bypass it all. And eventually, after about, you know, like 2 years, 2.5 years, 3 years of fighting to get enough insurance to pay for it, I got it, and I realized, I was like, well, I guess I'm going to live, and I'm going to need a job now. I'm going to need to do something. What do I know how to do? Well, gosh, I play a lot of video games, a lot, and I really liked it. My favorite game that I played a ton of at that time was a game called Amplitude. I'd been playing Frequency, I'd been playing Amplitude. And as the surgery was coming up, and I was like, well, I'm gonna, you know what? We're going to start this. I'm going to start applying to companies. I realized that Harmonix was about an hour away from my house. They were in Boston. I lived on the North Shore. So before the surgery, I started applying to them. I found their address, and I started applying to them, being like, I'll come do QA for you. You want some QA? And just send my resume, which had like Burger King and a video store on it, so that wasn't, you know, terribly great. But I just kept applying, and the CFO of Harmonix at the time was Mike Dornbrook, who his first job in the industry was QA on Zork, which is the most badass thing that has ever happened. And his rejection letters to me, I have saved over the years because they were just beautiful. It's like, he's like the best. So I just kept applying, and they kept being like, no, like absolutely not. At one point, Mike did write back. He's like, look, this probably isn't going to happen. Like in a nice way, but like you don't need to send something every week to me. And I got the surgery, and things were, I had no job, and it was like a couple of months later, and I applied for roughly the 8th time in 6 months to them. And he was like, well, turns out somebody here knows you. And it was like a friend of a friend worked there, and he was like, so why don't you come in and have an interview? And I ended up working as a QA tester on Karaoke Revolution.
Oh yeah.
singing George Michael's Careless Whisper for 8 hours a day. Good times. I noticed the guy playing the saxophone who's walking around knows only the opening strains of Careless Whisper. And I'm having like a Clockwork Orange sort of thing to it. But so that's how I got started. I worked for Harmonix for a number of years. And then brain tumory stuff happened again. And that kind of kicked me out of the industry again. But we're all right now. Yeah. Once I started feeling better again, I applied hard to start working in indie games again, and then worked my way up. And, you know, now I think I'm doing all right.
Yeah.
I'm doing all right.
Adult Swim's pretty awesome,
good. Adult Swim's pretty good.
Yeah.
Pretty sweet.
We got all the games.
So, Jessa, any tumors?
I don't.
Okay.
I've got nothing that impressive. my origin story is sort of a lot of seizing opportunity and, to be honest, kind of busting ass. For a long time, I wanted to undersell that and say that I just kept getting lucky. But the truth is that you have to work hard, too, and seize those opportunities. When I was in college, I was going to college in Boston at Emerson. I started with theater and transferred to writing, which ends up being also as useless as theater. But I can write real good. During college, I was nannying to pay the bills, and I actually was nannying for the hiring director of Harmonix. And I started dating a guy that worked at Harmonix and making friends with people who worked at Harmonix. So when they needed play testers for a brand new dance game that they were making, even though no one at the studio really knew anything about dance, I got pulled in to do play testing for them with the very, very early Dance Central 1 creation. They also needed real guitar players to test a new real guitar feature they were making, so I got pulled in for that. So then in the summer, when they desperately suddenly needed a publishing intern, the hiring director that I had been nannying for, who knew I was trying to figure out what to do with my life because I graduated college with a writing degree, suggested I go in and apply. So I did. I got the gig because they were so desperate. I think it was just one interview, too, and we sat around talking about Europe and Emerson College the whole time. And then a lot of people at Harmonix work at Emerson College, turns out. Went to Emerson. So I got the gig. It was supposed to be like a 60-day one, and I basically didn't say no to anything for those 60 days. I worked all the time. Within the first week of working at Harmonix, I went to Comic-Con. I was working parties until 4 a.m. every day. I was doing all the grunt work, all the carrying bags. I can remember Eric Pope handing me a bag and literally springing away so I would have to carry it. But you start at the bottom and kind of work your way up. They extended my contract twice until they couldn't actually extend it any longer. So then I was transferred to the playtest department and worked in user research for the length of a contract that I could work there. I got out of games briefly, and I worked at a writing company. It was terrible. And then I worked at I did customer service for an Oriental furniture company, which was both terrible and fascinating, and I know so much about Oriental furniture now.
That's a life skill now.
It was great.
Yeah, that's great.
And it was phone customer support, which is also really hairy. But then it meant that Harmonix asked me to come back and head up their customer support for a while. So I came back and did that, continued to kind of accept any opportunity that came up. I continued to do customer support and then also took on community management, which I dabbled in a little bit with the internship. I had been doing PR, interning, traveling, community, like literally anything that came up, I would tackle. I Dance Central kept going, so I was continuing with that. I took on being the financial admin for the publishing team. I then, a couple of years ago, became the event manager for Harmonix, did that for a while, and then about 2 years ago, switched over to product management. So I've been doing that for about 2 years, and then in December, they asked me to actually take over as creative lead for the project I was product managering on, which is an unannounced secret title I can't talk about, but I'm also still doing the Dance Central stuff. So it kind of has been just a constant yes to this, yes to that, yes to anything that I can actually take on, and it has worked out in that it continues to make them want to keep me around, which is nice in an industry that is really difficult, to be honest, to stay in, and gives you a good reputation, I guess, for working hard and tackling challenges, even though if you don't necessarily know what you're doing when you start them, which then makes it more likely that people are going to give you new opportunities. So it was just a lot of that, of never saying no and then wondering later if I should have said no and sticking with it. And so then now here I am at PAX again.
Awesome.
After, I think I've been in the industry like 5 or 6 years. I don't really remember.
That's awesome. I had no idea you did that many different things.
It's constant.
I think I met you, what, like 3 or 4 years ago at this point?
Yeah, and I've usually had 3 or 4 titles at a time, and right now I only have 2.
Right.
And it's really weird.
Yeah, yeah.
But I have multiple projects.
We just knew you initially. We kept running into you at the Harmonix booth, and you'd be like drenched in sweat dancing all day.
Yeah.
Like when she says she hustled, like it's ridiculous. We'd walk by as press, and we'd be like, oh, there's that dancing girl again. And you'd just be like red and just like, hey, everybody. Like,
yeah.
It's challenging. So that's really cool.
Yeah. So I worked on the Dance Central franchise, yeah. Disney Fantasia Music Evolve, Rock Band Blitz, Rock Band 3. Like yeah. We have so many games that we make and have dabbled in each and every one of them. Except for Rock Band 4, which I had nothing to do with until this weekend.
Does Rock Band 4 have Bohemian Rhapsody?
It does not.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it will. No, that was Rock Band 3 song, right?
Yeah, I don't know.
Was Rock Band 3 on disc or DLC? It's all gone. I did customer support for years. And
all gone.
Away.
Awesome. Laura.
Hi.
Hi. Welcome.
Oh, thanks.
So I want to hear this story. I'm excited.
Oh, man.
This is what normally happens when you come on the show for the first time, so we're going to do it right now.
Oh, good.
Live.
We're recording.
Yeah.
So I got started at theater.
Ah.
So I was studying theater. I was actually had kind of decided I wanted to pursue acting straight out of high school, and I went to college for theater and got a play kind of in the community doing a show, and somebody that was in the show with me, Kent Williams, played Dr. Giroux on Dragon Ball Z. Dragon Ball Z was recorded in Dallas. And so I went in and auditioned for Funimation and got the part of Kid Trunks on Dragon Ball Z and kind of started voice acting then. And then through that, got my audition for Blood Rain. So I ended up getting cast as Blood Rain back in the day. That was the
very
first...
I love that game, by the way. I really did.
Very first game I ever did. And then I did Deus Ex, The Invisible War. That recorded in Texas. So I did voice acting in Texas for about, I don't know, 8 years before I made the move out to California. And ever since then, it's kind of been solely voice acting. So since I got out to California, I think my first game was, I don't even know, World of Warcraft. Might have been my first one. So I played Jaina Proudmoore in that. And it just kind of keeps expanding. You know, I worked with one studio and then... because of that, it would open the door to another one, and then once you're, you know, represented by an agency, then, you know, you audition for 100,000 things. So I auditioned for probably 100, for every job I get, I have 100 that I don't, and it just kind of, you just got to keep going and not
I think you're underplaying how much stuff you're in, because it is absolutely, even since I started hounding you for an interview like many years ago, I'm just going to keep bugging you about that.
I'm here, man.
That's right. That's it. The debt has been paid off. No more guilt for you ever again. No, but you have been in just so many incredibly wonderful projects. I mean, that has to feel so validating as an actor to all of a sudden be in all of these things that are just so highly lauded. So.
It's crazy. Yeah. What's crazy is the transition now from, you know, I started in voice acting, the transition that so many games are making into motion capture now, so much of my work is on a stage at this point, which is funny because it calls back to the theater roots. It feels very much like you're on a stage performing, because it's, when you're doing motion capture, it's it records the subtle differences that are present in film work, but when you're, it also needs kind of an amplified performance, so you're doing kind of a stage performance for it as well. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I did Infamous Second Son. I play Fetch in that. Halo 5 Guardians, which is coming out in October, I play Spartan Vale.
That's mocap
Vale.
Too, is right?
That was mocap.
Okay.
Working on a couple other things, mocap that I can't say right now, but are pretty, pretty cool.
They're definitely cowboy titles from that voice.
there's a lot. It's crazy.
Yeah, it
it's
is. Crazy. And then, of course, there's Critical Role, which I'm a huge fan.
Yes!
I'm a huge fan of that.
So, yeah, just recently we started doing, because of all the voice acting, one of my friends who's a voice actor, Liam O'Brien, he for his birthday, wanted to get together and play a game of Dungeons & Dragons. And I had never played before. And so he asked a bunch of voice actors to get together and play it. And we played one game, and all of us loved it so freaking much that we asked if we could keep doing it. And so we did, and we played for a couple years before Geek & Sundry approached us. Matt Mercer is a voice actor. He's our DM. And they approached him and said, we've heard about your game. I don't know how the hell they heard about our game. But they'd heard about our game and asked if we would come on their Twitch channel and film it every week. And so we were like, I don't know, that might be weird, but let's try it. So we did, and it's just been so much fun.
It's going so well. Thursday evenings, 7 Pacific.
7 p.m.,
right?
Yeah.
So definitely tune in to Critical
Role. It's crazy, crazy fun, and we all kind of stay in character voices the entire time. And I'm a half-elf ranger with a bear. So.
Yeah, Trinket. So, Trinket's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, we'll talk more. All right. Ben.
Excellent.
You're up.
Right. So in order to keep the panel consistent, I'll start with theater.
Really? Is this real?
Absolutely, 100%.
No way. Yeah,
so, I called
okay,
this.
Well, it's complicated. So when I don't know how far back to go, but when I was very young, I did a lot of theater, sort of middle school, high school, a little bit college stuff. Did a lot of in forensics, speech, whatever, that sort of thing. Doesn't help. I still talk too fast. But when I got to school, I got a degree in computer engineering. That was the big difference, I think. So I got a degree I could get a job with. So
you guys all have jobs now. It worked out.
Yeah.
They're just not necessarily.
Yeah. I've been programming since I was probably 8 or 9. And whenever I programmed when I was a kid, I always wrote stupid games, But when I got to school for computer, like college, it didn't occur to me that I could get a games degree, because this is like early 90s, when I went to school. So it wasn't really a path that was obvious, like, oh, I'm a programmer, I should get a games degree. So I'm like, I'm a programmer, I should go into engineering. So that's what I did. I got an engineering degree. Right about the same time I got out of school, the web happened, and so I became a web programmer. So that's kind of what I did. Then .com happened, and it was great, and I got a .com job, and was making a ton of money and spending it like crazy because I was like 22. And then the .com crash happened in like the late 90s, and I got laid off, and I had like $3,000 in my bank account because I spent all the money they had paid me the last 5 years because I was very irresponsible. So save your money. It's very important. So I paid my rent on my credit card for a few months. And I was tired of the .com world because I just didn't click with the sort of like corporate America shtick, It was very soul crushing. At the same time the .com was crashing, I was starting to do community theater. There it is again.
There
so
you go.
I did a lot of technical directing, did some acting, set design. It's community theater. You do everything. And in my community theater work, I hooked up with the special effects guys in Denver, where I was. Because we're like, oh, we need like a blood hit, or I need to do some light effect, or I need to do whatever. So we got to know the special effects guys really well. And so when I got laid off from the .com world, I'm like, fuck this. Fuck working with computers. I'm going to go do special effects. So I'm like, calling my friend Tim. I'm like, Tim, I want a job. He's like, well, I can only pay you minimum wage because it's TV, basically. So I'm like, great. I'm going to become a fog machine technician for $9 an hour. Boom, let's do this, right? So I did
that's
that for
a thing?
Well, I mean, like, that's kind of what I called it.
You're, okay.
I was wow. FX technician, which is like, you're yeah. the guy who goes to the truck, gets whatever they need, okay. drags the set, plugs it in, turns it on, you know.
Yeah.
Long hours, terrible, you know. But it's, you know, it's TV, man. You're on set. You're doing cool stuff. So when I'm still programming in my free time, and so this company special, it's called FX West in Denver. They also do motion control, which is like, you know, robotic camera rigs, right? But all the, like, special effect camera stuff is done with motion control. And at the same time, I sort of started the company as a fog machine technician. They sort of started this new venture called SpiderCam, which is just like giant hanging rigs that are computer controlled. It's like really high-speed moving camera stuff. So if you've seen like Spider-Man 1, 2, or 3, the back of the Tobey Maguire ones, where the camera's like swinging down through the city streets, that was shot with a SpiderCam rig. And I was there at the time when that was sort of thought of. And so I was like one of the technicians who was one of the main guys who ran the rig. And the software we were using at the time was fucking terrible. It was all in DOS. And this is like late 90s, early 2000s, and they're still using DOS. It's terrible. So I'm like, well, you know, I'm just going to write something better. So in my free time, over by the course of 18 months, I just wrote a whole new program to run our rig. And it was like made because I had to go run the rig during the daytime on set with the shitty software. So every time I was frustrated, I'd put new stuff into my software. So it was like, had a gamepad, so I could control the camera with a gamepad. It was very real-time. It was all animations. It hooked up with, like, Maya and 3D applications and stuff. And so it just made the whole thing really easy. And so we started using, actually, the first time we ever used my software on a production job was for the Oscars in 2004, I think. 2005, can't remember now. So it was very scary. So, like, yeah. Here's my software, first time we've ever used it, and we got this giant flying rig. So the SpiderCam
rig. You killed half of Hollywood.
Right. like I've got $1 million of gear hanging over, like, $30 billion worth of people.
Yeah.
It's always good to put value
in. And it's live,
people.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And the Oscars is live. It's shot live. And it's like a 6-hour show, and it's like the worst thing ever. And you got your little headset on, and the director's just screaming at everybody in the headset the whole time. So it's very stressful. And we actually crashed. The whole system crashed for 30 seconds in the middle of the show.
Oh, boy.
But luckily, no one, like, it was just at the right time. It was like, we're kind of coming down, and then we sort of stopped and got the shot, and the system crashed. But they wanted to stop for a second, so I'm like, fuck. So I'm like, the guy who's running the camera, I'm like, we crashed. I'm going to reboot everything. So I'm just like, just rebooting everything, you know, turn it all back on. I'm like, because the rig is like 17 parts. It's like the computer where I am, and there's like all the actual motors are around the room with like our riggers on. So I'm like, riggers, shut everything off, turn it back on again. So it's like a full reboot. It took us about 30 seconds, but got it back out. So anyway, that was the first time I used my software for a gig, but we went on to use it for probably 20 or 30 or 40 more shows, and they actually still use the software now.
Wow.
So, yeah.
That's impressive.
About sort of in the same time frame, so actually that would be like 2003, actually, not 2005, sorry. 2003, that was when it happened. Then went on and did a whole bunch more gigs with that software, and it was really fun. Got tired of traveling all over the place all the time, so I sort of had been in the film industry for about 6 or 7 years by this time, so about 2005, 2006. And we were in Australia, and I met my now wife there, and I'm like writing to like step away from film because I'm tired of it. But in order to get a visa into Australia, I had to live with my wife to get a de facto spousal visa for a whole year. But I couldn't work there because I didn't have a working visa. So I'm like, I got basically 12 months where I can't do anything and get paid for it. So I'm like, I'm going to write games. Yeah. This is what I've always wanted to do, right? And like all the stuff I'd done in the film industry is all real-time control of stuff, so like it really wasn't that hard to make that lateral move from like real-time visual effects to like game control, you know. So I started writing my own game engines and OpenGL and stuff, and that was terrible. Never write your own game engine. Always use Unity or UE4, whatever. So I actually ended up starting using Unity very early. But yeah, so that's, and then over that 12-month period, I sort of got into the local scene in Melbourne, which is a great scene if you ever want to move to Melbourne and be an indie. It's really good. And then sort of near the end, once I got my sort of permanent visa and I could work, mm-hmm. and I started doing contract work. And
so they actually allowed you into the country.
They did. Well, wow. I was kind of married at the time.
So okay, there you go.
You know, they could have kicked me out, but yeah. So so I started doing contract work and just like all these little games. I'm working on such exciting titles as Dora and Diego's Sticker Safari for Nickelodeon.
Oh, I remember.
I know, it's great. Dora in German is crazy. and then. Basically, this guy named Neil Renison called me up one day. He's like, my programmer has got to go. I need another programmer. What do you think? So I sat down and had a beer with him. He had this idea, this crazy idea to do digital game books, which is like choosable path adventure games, but with dice on the phone. I'm like, that sounds like a lot of fun. So we sort of...
That sounds awesome.
I know, right? Yeah. It is. It is awesome.
It is awesome.
It continues to be awesome.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah. So we sort of started 10-man games together and published, I think, at this point...
There are a lot.
35
it's crazy.
Or 40 books now.
I can't even keep up with it.
So if you look at, if you look for 10-man games on like your phone, Android, iOS, or Steam, you'll see a bunch of stuff there. It's all really cool. Yeah, I did that for 6 years, and I'm still sort of nominally attached to that. And I got... Gamebooks is awesome, but I was like, I need to try something new. So I formed another company called Mighty Games with four guys, two of which are Matt Hall and Andy Sum, who made Crossy Road. You may have heard of that. The other one's Matt Ditton. So there's four of us now. We're making casual games that are very similar to Crossy Road.
It's so funny. I would never – Crossy Road isn't the type of game that I would normally seek out, but I had a fever about 4 months ago, and it was the first time I had missed work for Sword Coast Legends. I was like, I was too sick to even, like, move. I was, like, just dying. My wife had to go to work, so I was like, all right. So I loaded up my Fire TV, and Crossy Road was on Fire TV. I laid there for, like, 11 hours, and I'm so fucking good at that game now. And it's very addicting. So.
I'm terrible at it, actually. It was really funny. We they just released the Pac-Man one, right?
Yeah.
And we've been testing it for months, right? And there's a bunch of ways you have to, like, get far enough to unlock things.
Yeah.
And they're like, I've got one of the few devices that we can test, like, immediately with.
Uh-huh.
And so I get the thing, and I'd be like, I can't tell if this bug is still here because I can't get far enough. They were like, dude, like, fuck, you know. So like, anyway, so I'm terrible at that game, and it affects production.
Oh,
so
well. There you go. All right, last but not least, Mylan, how you doing?
Hi, I'm good.
Good.
How are you? Okay, so the thing that I think is really fun is that actually he's my origin story. So I have to tell you all about how I met Ben, because Ben got me into video games. So I don't even know what year this was. We've been trying to figure this out.
It was
like 15 years
ago.
Really, yeah.
She's less old.
Yeah, so our moms are both novelists, and they were in writer's group together, and they started talking one day about their kids, him and me, and how, like, we had all this stuff in common, and they're like, oh, we could be in-laws. We need to do this. They need to meet.
They tried to hook you guys up?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
wow.
Yeah. They were like, it's Christmas time, and he, like, shows up at the house and everything. Yeah, yeah.
So you weren't with Sean at that time?
No,
her husband, sorry. Yeah,
yeah, no.
I totally blew it.
Yeah.
Huge mistake.
I don't remember. I don't know what the situation was for either one of us at the time, but we...
Oh, I remember. No, sorry.
So we.
Oh, this is getting awesome.
We super hit it off though, and he was living in Denver, and I was living in Washington D.C. And so, like, we just, like, talked all the time, and would hang out when we would visit, or we'd both wind up in New York City and hang out and stuff. And so, I think the first thing that you roped me in on was writing a screenplay,
yeah.
Right? So I adapted. So I'm a writer, and I've been a writer since I was, like, tiny little thing, and. So I adapted his mom's novel for into a screenplay, and he paid me in software, which totally won my heart, you know? And so we have collaborated on things off and on for a long time. We were working on another little indie game project years ago. And then...
Oh, right.
Right?
Right.
I know.
The opera one.
Yeah.
Oh, God, that was so
yeah.
Funny. I still want to make that. Anyway, sorry.
You have all the levels designed.
I know.
I have it all planned out. Yeah. Okay, so anyway, so... he moved to Australia, which was really cool. And they had two games out, 10-man games did, for Game Book Adventures, and they were both full-on fantasy Dungeons & Dragons-style games with the dice rolling, which are super amazing, by the way. We'll play them, because they're so fun. And I was a huge choose-your-own-adventure game book fan when I was a kid. And so he called me up, and he's like, hey, we want to branch out. We want to do... maybe some other games that appeal to a different kind of audience. So I was like, well, I'm different. That works. And we thought it would be kind of fun to do something that was a little more geared towards women. And at the time, all the women we knew were reading Twilight, which, I mean, I'll admit it. I read every word of every book. It's like eating Twinkies. It's like you eat a whole bunch, yeah. Right?
Yeah.
And you eat them all, and then you feel kind of bad about yourself.
Yeah.
Then you eat a whole bunch more because you're just like, oh.
What did I do?
Yeah.
What did I just do?
So, so we thought it would be really fun to write a vampire interactive fiction book. But I said the only way that I could possibly do it is if it was a comedy, because really. And I'm also a huge Buffy fan, and so I put together the proposal for this, and they accepted it. And then, so I wrote that, and I'm also a television producer, so they were a two-man studio, and so you cannot get a producer next to anything without them just producing it. So I was like, well, I'm just going to produce this game too. And they're like, thank you.
Great.
Yeah. So I did that one. And then we found an author to do a second one. So I produced that one as well. And so those are both out. Mine is called Strange Loves Vampire Boyfriends. You play as a college girl and you can date vampires or slay them or become one, whatever you want. It's your choice. And there are achievements and you can tweet from inside the app and, you know, like, if you make all the very most boring choices in the game, what I think are the most boring choices in the game, you can actually become a crazy cat lady. Which apparently, like, everybody does, because that is the ending that I hear from everyone. But there's a point where you can, like, follow a strange noise, and it seems like it's going to be really exciting. But after you make that choice, you can't get off that train. Go to the next page. You keep finding cats. I think you find like 30 cats and you have to drop out of college to get a job so that you can feed them and they all have names.
Wow.
Yeah. So, so anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. You have to, they need you. They just need you. So that's what I've been doing. And then I met these guys and I've been a Nerd Appropriate a bunch of times, which is fun. And, I just wrote, and then I started putting on panels. So, I like to talk and I like to come to the video game conventions. Oh, that's right. Because they brought me out. Well, Ben was coming to the United States and to PAX East. And so he's like, come visit. And I was like, absolutely. And I had never been to a video game convention before. PAX East
was
my
come visit and work our booth, please.
Well, okay, yeah. So I got there and I'm trying to demo this game that I had never seen before. And I'm just like, the iPad doesn't work when you hold it like this and touch it like this. This is very awkward. But I learned how to demo a game. And then they started bringing me out. And I would work the booth. And then we were in the Indie Mega booth. And then I started doing panels because I thought it was really fun and interesting. And because I wrote a romance game, I started a panel called Foreplay, Romance and Games, which is actually right after this. If you guys want to come see us, several of us are on it at 6 o'clock in the Sasquatch Theater.
Plug,
shameless plug. But since I've been doing the romance panel for all this time, I actually pitched the idea as an article for Vice. So I had a piece about romance and video games in Vice just like a few weeks ago. So. I don't know. I'm kind of just doing all sorts of different things, but it's all because...
Yeah, I think that's the really interesting thing about the video game industry is I've always wanted to be part of the games industry since I was a little kid, but it seemed like something that was completely unachievable because I literally have no skills other than I have the ability to talk relatively well, which I don't know if that's a life skill or not. But so I was teaching, and then all of a sudden I was like, well, the only thing I could really kind of weasel my way into would be community management, which is talking to people and hopefully, you know, calming them down so they don't want to punch you in the face. A lot of you guys did community for a while, and you're still alive. And you look relatively happy. So
scarred but alive.
Oh yeah, I always
learned how
stories.
To shove it way down inside all the emotions.
It's
like
really
real
true.
Far down
it's
down.
Really true.
They're happy, but they're out of community. I think.
Yeah, that is very true. They got out. Yeah, absolutely. But the one thing I do want to talk about before we start talking to you guys out there is I found work life balance, and I'm going to ask you guys for advice.
What's that word?
Work life balance has been probably the biggest challenge for me because even when I was an educator, I could go home and grade my papers, do my podcast, write a few blogs, and then I was done. And I'd still have like a couple hours to, you know, eat, maybe bathe.
Maybe on
occasion. So how did you guys learn to balance? Because, you know, the industry is awesome and fun and you get to be creative and that's amazing. But how do you actually make time for your families and for everything else? Because the hours are brutal and that's not a lie. So sorry, you, Sean. Have you figured it out yet?
I think I've been doing video games for 13 years now. No, I haven't. I try and I fail.
Yeah, you told me the other night.
No, it's, so the company that I was working at before Adult Swim, I was working for a small indie up in Boston, Firehose Games, and I was basically the product marketing manager for one title and then helping out with two others. And the one title we were putting out is the one that I designed. So that's actually really easy.
It's called Let's Quip. It's really fun.
It's good. Competitive joke writing. but then... so now I'm an Adult Swim, and we have like a release every 3 weeks, and there's like two of us on everything. So it's like the most amount of work ever, and I had to move to Atlanta, which is the greatest. I love that city so much, but I don't get the chance to see it. Sorry, I didn't mean to be sad or anything. Yes. Go to Atlanta. You'll have a great time. Tell me how it is. No, I mean, I like my wife also is in video games. So we both work a ton, but we still make time for each other,
Yeah. Yeah.
We can, and we don't have kids, so I suppose that makes it a little bit easier. I'm not letting any of my children down, I guess is what I'm saying.
Wow.
I'm not saying any of you are.
Wow.
I'm just saying if I had kids, they would probably resent me.
Does anybody else on this panel have kids? Okay, so I would say have a kid because that makes you go home.
Yeah, see,
like,
there we go.
I have to pick my kid up at 5:45. I got to be out the door at 5. It does not matter. I do not care. I'm not going to piss off the nuns. Okay? Yeah. It's not happening.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I also forgot to tell you, I have a background in theater, too.
See?
Did you really?
I totally
I'm
do.
I'm the only one.
Never. Yeah.
I don't think I've ever told anyone this, but I took a theater class over the summer in 7th grade.
It counts.
It's my dark secret.
We'll count it. I don't know. I think so. This year, the big thing for me is I finally take sick days, which has been a really big thing. I get migraines, and I would just go to work with migraines. And I think learning to take care of yourself is where you kind of balance what you need as a person versus what you're trying to do professionally. And for a long time, I just kept saying, as you could probably tell from earlier, that like I don't say no to anything. I'm going to do everything. I'm just going to push and push. This is my career crunch time, and I'm going to do everything. And you burn yourself out, and you can actually hurt yourself and your career at eventually doing that, especially if you start dropping the ball or you start suffering or you just make yourself miserable in a career. So I think in the past, year or 2 years, I really started learning a little bit more, at least, how to figure out what my personal needs are. And, my husband also works in games, but I do like to see him sometimes. And figuring out what exactly you need and how to balance and how to ask for help when you have too much. And it's crummy because sometimes there's no solution. The game I'm a creative lead on, I'm the writer, I'm the creative lead, I'm the product manager. Like, there's an unending thing of...
Can't wait to see what this game is.
I know.
I'm
excited.
Me too. I can't wait to see what
it is. It's Half-Life 3.
Confirmed.
You heard it here.
Harmonix is Half-Life 3. This seems suspicious.
But I think it's always going to be a give and take, and you go through periods of crunch, and then you realize that, like, oh, my husband and I haven't been on a vacation together in a year and a half. It's time that we do that because my work suffers if I don't also take care of myself. So I don't know that there's an easy answer. I feel like it's just you have to watch out for yourself at some point as well and realize that it's not worth dying for your job. You can still be very passionate and successful and work really hard without totally destroying your life.
Yeah. Eat regularly. Yeah. If you can.
That's important.
Yeah, yeah, and I got a fitness tracker recently. Yeah, everybody's very tired of hearing me talk about this, but but it tracks your sleep too, and it tracks your steps. So it turns it into a game. I never cared about moving around. I could sit on a couch with a controller in my hands or in front of a computer for like 20 hours and not even ever move if somebody would give me soda. But now that I have the fitness tracker, like, seriously, I want to walk around. Yeah, I get points.
I had the Nike Fuel Band.
Yeah.
And I was so active when I wore it.
Right? Yeah. It's amazing.
It got really nasty, so I stopped wearing it. And now I'm lazy again.
You're absolutely not lazy. So I wanted to ask you, you travel probably more than the rest of us because I follow you on Twitter and you're always someplace, I mean, basically all the time.
Yeah.
So how do you deal with that? And that's a big part of this job. No matter what you do in the industry, you're going to have to move around a lot and you're going to have to travel quite a lot. You may have to move for your job. But Laura travels to a lot of shows. So how do you actually contend with that? And how do you have that work-life balance?
It's actually really, as an actor in general, it's hard because you're constantly in flux. You don't have that normal salary job. You don't have the 9-to-5. So when you're working, you want to be working. So any job that comes up, I want to be able to say, yes, I can do that. So, for the past few years, it's been crazy. But the upside is my husband is also a voice actor. So, Travis Willingham. So I don't know how it happens, but we get cast a lot together. And nobody ever knows that we're married.
Really?
When we're auditioning, and we just keep getting parts together. We're both in Halo 5. We were both in Infamous. We're both in Avengers Assemble. So I get to record with him and work with him on a very regular basis. And so because of that, a lot of the appearances that I do, he is asked to do the same appearance. So we travel together. It's a really nice thing. Our poor dog.
But, that's so sad.
I know. He has a fairy godmother. Don't worry about it. it's a crazy thing. Because if I'm home for like 3 days and I haven't had, I haven't had a recording session, I feel like I'm letting everybody down. I'm like, I have to get a job. And Travis is like, you have 2 weeks solid coming up. Don't even talk about that. So,
yeah, it is funny. You, I think a lot of people that work in games, you get this. It gives you so much adrenaline, and it's such a sense of camaraderie. And it's also, it's exhausting, but at the same time, when you're working with other people that are doing the same thing, you kind of feed off each other. So it becomes this strange brotherhood of exhaustion, and everyone's just working as hard as they can work. But like Jessa said, you have to be able to, you have to be able to control it and take those days off. Like, yeah. I hadn't taken like an actual day off until I got the flu where I played Crossy Road. And I was just like, this is all I can do to survive is sit there and play Crossy Road. Yeah. Anybody else have any work-life balance tips?
I'm a workaholic, and it's a problem. I think this trip, before I got here, I had like 2 weeks where my wife was traveling for work, and so I just went along with her and sort of had a vacation. It's really like the first vacation I've had in about 6 years, so it's kind of a problem. But I think for me, I do take a lot of time on a daily basis, because what I've noticed working on lots of projects, being the programmer on most projects because it's indie, is that I can see the quality of my work plummets if I'm not taking care of myself, like really hard. And I watch other people do it too, especially like students and like juniors will come in and they'll be like, I'm just gonna work all weekend. And I'm like, don't, no, go home. Or they'll do it anyway because they're really excited and that's great. And then they erase the database, or they do something totally horrible, or it's just really bad work. And I do the same thing. It's like, if you're not taking care of yourself, your work will suffer, especially creative work.
Oh, yeah.
Creative work is really hard to do if you're not taking care of yourself. And we're all workaholics. We're all very passionate about our jobs because it's fun and creative and artistic. But if you don't stop, after 8 hours a day, you have to stop and go do something else, or you will make shit games and shit art, and you don't want that. So that's how I keep myself. I'm like, oh, it's 6 o'clock. I've been here since 7 in the morning. I don't care what's happening right now. I don't care what bugs there are. I have to go, because if I stay here, I'm going to make more work myself tomorrow.
Yeah. So. I mean, that translates to acting, too. If you push yourself too hard, you lose your voice, and then you hold a production for you guys, and then everybody hates you. So you have to take care of yourself.
Yeah, the game's the same. It's like, if you work too hard, you start making bad code or missing tests or whatever it is, and you hold the whole team back. And so, like, a lot of the juniors on our team, they're just super passionate, and they just want to fucking kill it, and I love that. But they stay too late, they work too hard, and then they actually move us backwards. And so I have to be like, no, you're done. It's 6 o'clock, go home. Get out of here.
Yeah.
Come back tomorrow.
That's good advice.
Yeah.
And I will say, too, as a writer, I mean, I need space. I will leave the office. I will go hide when I need to write. I have, like, office in my house. And I need to have time to let my subconscious work, too. So, trying to – and I work on a lot of different projects all the same time. But the same thing, like, at the end of the day, you got to stop at some point. Or at least give yourself a break and, like, have dinner.
Yeah.
Watch a TV show.
Play a game.
Play a game. Yeah.
I haven't played a game for a long
time. It's funny. I was thinking about that today. I've played less games in my year as a community manager than I've ever played in my life.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just because of the hours, And it's not that I still love games. I'd play them constantly, but it's very challenging.
Yeah.
The other night, here, I went back early. Like, I left dinner, and I was like, I got in bed and played my Vita. I was like, I'm at PAX. I'm going to play a video game.
Absolutely. We have some time here, and we would absolutely love questions if you have any questions for us. If you're not, we'll just keep talking and saying stuff. But the floor is now open. Should you be the brave soul to? Oh, no. All right.
Ooh.
No one has any questions. Oh, we got.
Bring it.
We want you on the mic.
Woo!
Yeah, break the ice.
Cheers.
Yeah, that one.
Show us your mic technique.
There we go. Nice.
No stress. Is it on? Oh,
it
yeah.
It is. Yeah.
Okay.
Here's the thing now. We just tricked you.
Wow.
Since there's no one behind you, you have to keep asking questions.
This is Ash's way of getting out of doing his job.
Ah, there Yay! We go. You owe those guys some beverage of their choice, because we were just going to have you keep going, so thank you.
So a couple of you have already touched on this, but are you avid gamers yourselves when you aren't working?
Try to be.
Yeah.
Love video games.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think everybody that I've honestly ever met in the industry, you would have to love games in some capacity to be a part of it. I know everybody on this panel plays a lot of games. Mm-hmm. And I think we would all play more if we had more time, you know. Tabletop game, any kind of games that we could play, we would probably play more of. But absolutely,
I do get to play a lot of games that aren't finished yet. We have a lot of developers who send us in demos and stuff to look at their demos and give feedback and, you know, potentially publish them. And actually, right now, one of those demos that we got is my favorite game of 2015. And you guys have no idea what this is. It's a broken demo that lasts like 12 minutes. And I have played that game like 300 times since we got it. But that's like, you know, so it's I don't necessarily have time to finish, you know, like Witcher 3 or something like that. I'd love to because it's great. But yeah, I'll still play stuff all the time.
Are
certainly.
You guys going to publish that game?
Which one? The one
that you like?
I don't know. I hope so. I mean, I don't like that. In the end, that's not up to me.
Who can we write to?
What's that?
Who can we write to? We're all going to write.
Okay,
to
perfect.
Do people write anymore?
Write to the developer and say, take whatever deal they give.
I mean, anyway, yeah. So, I mean, like, I think I play a lot of games for about an hour. That's, I mean, because for us, it's mostly research. Like, I'll try to spend time during my job to actually sit down and play games. But when I actually have free time, I'll go to my giant Steam pile of shame and be like, what haven't I played? It's good. And I'll start it. And I'll try to. I'll have like a Sunday. I'll be like, Sunday is my game day. And I'll try to like get all the way through Pillars of Eternity in one day, which you can't do. But you know, this all be like that was my last one I tried. I was like, yeah, Pillars of Eternity. Let's go. 10 o'clock. You know, so I just played it as long as I could, and that was great. Awesome. And that was as much as I played.
Well, and that's something that I think is interesting too, and it's something that I wanted to focus on when I made my game, is that it's sort of bite sized. You could finish a path in 20 minutes or a couple of hours. In that, I am really interested in kind of developing more and more games that are shorter too. I know some people get really mad when the games are not that long, but I think that you know, as you get older, you have more stuff going on, but you want to still be able to play. So yeah, but yeah, totally love games. So
thank you for being the first one. I really appreciate
Yay!
It.
Yay!
Hello, sir.
Hi there.
Hey.
So this question's a little bit directed at Laura, was it?
Mm-hmm.
I'm fresh out of college. I was really interested in voice acting. Because I'm late of theater. So I was wondering if you had any tips for someone trying to break into the industry?
Everybody kind of comes at it a different way. I think you definitely did a good job of studying. That's a lot of people just, you know, find out that I'm a voice actor or something, and they'll go, can you get me an audition? And studying theater is really, really important. Being where the work is incredibly important. So if there's not a lot in your hometown, then you need to be where they make games or cartoons or whatever it is that you want to do. And there's a lot of work outside of this interactive world for voice actors to do, you know, outside of what we all like want to be. There's promo, there's commercials, you know, there's the announcer for the Oscars. There's those people that can make a freaking lot of money doing those things. I say, speak in front of the mirror and see what kind of crazy voices you can do, and look at your mouth as you're doing it so that you know the way you made that sound. Record yourself so you're used to hearing yourself. Read out loud, because a lot of the times we don't get the scripts ahead of time, and we're cold reading in the booth. So you have to be really comfortable with being able to act on the fly. And just, you know, get out there and don't be afraid of rejection. Make a demo, send it out, see how people react to it, that kind of stuff.
Awesome, thank you.
That was a lot. of information.
There's a what's Tara Platt and voiceover voice actor Tara Platt's book and Yuri Lowenthal's book.
Oh yeah, voiceover voice actor.
Yeah, there's a good book on that stuff too. Tara Platt and Yuri Lowenthal wrote a book.
Both incredibly talented working voice actors. So they've got a lot of good information and also a lot of interviews with voice actors that work a lot in that book as well.
Pick it up.
Hi. My question's kind of a little weird. Basically, I myself have been in customer service for almost 14, 15 years now.
Wow, that's a marathon.
Yeah, I've done pretty much everything from managing to training to everything and through a gamut in a variety of companies, but I've never gotten into the industry that I want to get into, which is in the gaming industry. And I just want to know, like, have I passed that point? Like, have I gone just a little too far age-wise?
No way.
If like there's still like a hope out there for me.
So like as managing customer service for Harmonix, I also got to see how a lot of other companies do customer service, and it is a part of the industry that's sorely in need of people who care about it. And a lot of times it tends to be the thing that no one wants to deal with, no one wants to do. It's new employees who are kind of working their way up, so they don't really know what they're doing or how to manage it. And companies don't realize what a really important community and marketing tool it is. So if that's something that you like and are interested in, I would totally go out there and talk to companies. A lot of them are constantly hiring customer support people because they're hard to keep, because as I'm sure you know, you need thick skin, and you know there are a lot of skills that customer support needs that people don't have.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any age issue or anything like that. If you care about it and are willing to represent it, then companies are happy, customers are happy. Like, it's a win-win for everyone.
Honestly, but like in all the companies that I've worked for, including Harmonix, I ran the community team when Rock Band started. If we had had somebody apply who had 14, 15 years of customer service, not only would I have hired them, I would have given them my job. Like, straight up. Because like it's such a needed skill, and you need somebody who's proven that. And yeah, I think that I wouldn't look at it as a bane. That's a huge boon for you.
Yeah,
that's a really big boon for you.
Definitely don't lose your gusto. Keep trying, man. I applied for many community manager jobs before, you know, nepotism kicked in, and I ended up knowing someone at the right place at the right time. So go to shows, talk to as many people as you can talk to. Show your passion to everyone that you can show your passion to, and eventually something will click, and someone will be like, "Oh, remember that guy who had 14 years customer service who was really cool?" And then all of a sudden you'll have a job. So don't let your age slow you down at all. I'm an old man. So
thank you.
Yeah,
thanks. Hello. My question is, do you guys see a flood specifically for programming in any field really these days, but I guess specifically for gaming? Because currently I'm a high school student who spends his day, you'll never believe this, doing theater at school. And
so step one.
Spends his nights trying to teach himself different languages. And I'm just wondering, with graduating this year, if maybe that field, as far as computer science or design or anything like that, would become unnecessary and maybe flooded to the point where a job is not available?
No. Programmers are so hard to find. Like, we hire programmers all the time.
Yeah, Harmonix
and they
is
are
actively looking for, like,
so
six.
Hard to find.
Right.
Yeah.
So many people are writers and producers and that kind of, the kind of staff stuff. It's like the super tech stuff. It's really...
Yeah. Yeah. Do not stop learning programming. Keep going.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, like, and you know, when you get out, you know, start applying for, you know, junior positions and stuff, and just, you know, work your ass off and be awesome. Death.
And also get internships.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
That's my phone.
Okay.
Sorry, guys.
Thank you.
Yeah.
That was my fault.
Yeah. You have nothing to worry about if you're a programmer. Well, not nothing, but keep doing it. Yeah.
I kind of want to follow that up real quick, because I know actually with like headhunters, a lot of times they're not hiring for the game companies very much because there's not enough turnover. It's very a niche job, and so they're actually trying to hire for a lot of Amazon people.
Mm-hmm.
So This isn't actually my original question, but do you guys know how to get into that niche easier than going through the headhunters that are all out
there? Don't use a headhunter.
Yeah.
And the reason why is every company I've worked for will not work with headhunters.
Yeah.
Because it's a, I don't want to say it's like a scam.
It's annoying.
But it's annoying, and it's really annoying. And they also call up and start trying to poach people from your company while trying to. It's
and they don't know anything about you. And
it's like, real shady. Yeah. It's real shady. Yeah. Don't use a headhunter. Do it yourself.
Just go to the websites. There'll be a jobs. All of them have jobs link. And if they don't have jobs open, they'll be like jobs at, you know, whatever. And just be like, hey, you know, put me in your database. This is what I do. Here's my CV. You know, or and go to events like this and talk to people. The best way to get a job in Melbourne is to go to the monthly meetups because all the industry people are there. We give talks, and we're always looking for people to hire new recruits and stuff. And so if you go to these events, I assume wherever you are, there's probably some sort of dev meetup of indies, hopefully.
Right.
Go there, meet people. Yeah.
So here's my actually two original questions. So in an industry, having a partner or a husband or wife, do you see yourself capable of doing the things you are doing in the industry without them? And do you think that they really help to bring you to that next level? And then the second question, you don't have to answer both, but the second question is also since it's kind of origin stories, how did you leap, like, the path that led to you guys combining, like, knowing that, oh, this is going to be a good match for both of us because we're both it?
That's a great question, man.
So those
That's
are
really good. Because there are a lot of gaming couples up here, so.
The other thing is I've done research.
Hold on, I'm going to go sit and watch this.
I've actually done a little bit of research, and, you know, OkCupid is one of the more, and Match.com are, like, the two prominent dating sites. And I've looked for a lot of articles on that were Reddit or that were written about gaming dating sites, and I figured, well, okay, everybody's got WoW, right? Like that's essentially the gaming website, right? Or dating website. So, but really, there's not actually a good quality gamer dating website out there, right? And so, a lot of times, you do get more of the organic, you know, oh, I just so happened to, you know, the shooting star came across the sky and it fell in my lap, right? So, half saying that, maybe the origin story, and then also, how do they help you in the industry?
I'm going to be a horrible human being right now. We are told that we are almost out of time. We have 1 minute. Okay. Can you answer this question in 1 minute?
Yes, it helps. My wife also being in video games helps a lot in every aspect. And I probably wouldn't still be doing this if she wasn't doing this as well. It's the best. It's just fucking awesome. Two, you should start that gaming dating website. You should start working on it right now with that guy right there, the programmer. Hire him right now.
Yeah.
Give him a job.
Oh, you have a customer service guy too.
That's right.
Customer service.
You guys just formed a mega corporation.
This is how you got into the industry.
Origin story right here.
This is happening.
Go and make this happen.
There you go. All right, we'll do it.
All right, guys, we'll stick around for a few minutes outside. Thank you guys so much for coming. You guys are awesome, and come up and ask any questions if you have any. Thank you.
Yep.
Confused by the water distribution.
That's yours. That one's your. This one's your water.
But what about this one?
This one's my water.
But what about this one?
That one's probably Laura's water.
But what about that one?
That one's also Laura's water. She loves. She needs water real
She's
bad.
Very thirsty.
She's really. You know, voice actors. How you know how they get?
Ashes water.
She had miso for lunch.
He's got a rock star.